One of the things in our lives that we need to do, we try and do, and that is we try to learn. And this past week, I learned something that was sort of profound. I thought it was profound. The other morning, I was sitting at the table, and I had three little ones all gathered around me. And I'm sorting out all my pills. And I made the comment, I said, you know, I said, it's no fun getting old. And Theo said, yeah, you die sooner. So I thought, well, that's kind of profound. That's all I said. I think that's all I said all morning. But nevertheless, you always learn. Now, one of the things I want to do today, or what's my exercise is the fact that quite often in our Christian lives, we stress quite heavily the need to be doctrinally right. And so often we take pride in this, the fact that we are doctrinally right. And we like to kind of clothe ourselves in that cloak of being doctrinally right. And personally, I think it's vitally important to be doctrinally right. But that's not my exercise just now. What I'm thinking about now is not so much being doctrinally right, but to be practically right. Now, sometimes that's just a little bit different. Now, in Port Alberni just now, and I'm not sure if the brethren will finish it today or not, I doubt it, but we're going through the book of the Romans. And next week, perhaps, or the following week, we're going to carry on into 1 Corinthians. But I found it most interesting going through the book of the Romans, particularly the last several chapters, and seeing some very, very eye-opening thoughts that are very applicable, not only when Paul wrote to the Roman believers, but for you and I today. So with that in mind, I'm going to read a few verses from several chapters, and the first one is in chapter 12, verse number 1. I was going to go over a little bit of my outline of the epistle to the Romans, but being Brother Davis here, he might recognize it. And no doubt you've heard it before, so I'm not going to do that just now. So we're going to look at Romans chapter 12, verse number 1. I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that ye present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. For I say, through the grace given unto me and to every man that is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly according as God hath dealt to every man the measure of faith. Now we're going to go over let's go down to verse number 9. Let love be without dissimulation. Abhor that which is evil, cleave to that which is good. Be kindly affectionate one to another, with brotherly love and honor, preferring one another. Be kindly affectionate one to another, with brotherly love, in honor, preferring one another. Over to chapter 13. And verse number 8. Owe no man anything but to love one another. For he that loveth hath fulfilled the law. Verse 10. Love worketh no ill to his neighbor. Therefore love is the fulfilling of the law. Now chapter 14. Verse 1. Him that is weak in the faith receive ye, but not to doubtful disputations. For one believeth that he may eat all things, another who is weak eateth herbs. Let not him that eateth despise him that eateth not. And let not him which eateth not judge him which eateth, for God hath received him. Who art thou that judgest another man's servant? To his own master he standeth or falleth. Yea, he shall be holden up, for God is able to make him stand. One man esteemeth one day above another, another esteemeth every day alike. Let every man be fully persuaded in his own mind. And we're going to go down. I think we'll just refer to that. Go over to chapter 15. We then that are strong ought to bear the infirmities of the weak, and not to please ourselves. Let every one of us please his neighbor for his good to edification. For even Christ pleased not himself. But as it is written, the reproaches of them that reproach thee fell on me. For whatsoever things were written aforetime are written for our learning, that we through patience and comfort of the scriptures might have hope. Now the God of patience and consolation grant you to be like-minded one toward another, according to Christ Jesus. And then finally, just down to the end of chapter 15, he says in verse 30, Now I beseech you, brethren, by the Lord Jesus Christ's sake, and for the love of the Spirit, that ye strive together with me in your prayers to God for me. One, that I may be delivered from them that do not believe in Judea. Two, that my service which I have for Jerusalem may be accepted of the saints. Three, that I may come unto you with joy by the will of God. And four, and may with you be refreshed. Now that is all that we've read, and there's other passages that we're going to try to intertwine here. But the one verse that we really want to emphasize is the fact in verse 3 of 15, we read, Therefore even Christ pleased not himself. Over Peter says something similar in 1 Peter chapter 2, where he says, Therefore even thereunto were ye called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example. So the example that is left by Christ is vitally important. And here in this particular passage, he indicates to us, of course, that Christ pleased not himself. Now, when we think, of course, let me just go back just a wee bit. When we think of the whole concept of doctrine, and the first 8 chapters of the epistle basically is doctrinal, and then you have what is called in 9, 10, 11, the dispensational. But when we think of doctrine, doctrine leads to duty. Doctrine is not, ought not to be something that is of a dry, dusty, theological point that the old men love to argue about. But if doctrine is presented properly and correctly, I would suggest, doctrine has an extremely bearing on our practical life. And this is what we need to appreciate. See, it is taught in order that it would affect us. If ye know these things, we read in John, blessed are you if you do them. So when we look at the doctrinal viewpoints, the doctrinal sections of what Paul writes in any of the epistles, at the end of the doctrinal section, as he goes into the latter part of the epistle, there's a practical session. And the practical basis is upon what he has said in the doctrinal side. Now, what I'm thinking about today is very simply this. Paul, he's talking about those which are weak, and he's talking about those which are strong. Now, actually, this is not the only place that he raises this point. But we go, there's other epistles that he writes, and he goes over, covers a very similar ground. So obviously, this perhaps was a difficulty. And so really, if we wanted to talk today, I'm going to try and talk about how we get along with each other and how there are certain ideas and certain things that perhaps maybe a little bit of a difference of a viewpoint, but we're striving to get along with each other. You notice in chapter 12 and chapter 13, we both read there in those two chapters the fact of love. And love is something that must be seen and displayed amongst us. And based upon that love, when there is a difficulty or a problem, we handle it wisely and scripturally and spiritually. Because there will be differences. There will be differences of opinions. There will be differences of thought. I'm going to give you an example. And this sort of falls in with the subject. Because when we're talking about the weak here in Romans chapter 14, I'm going to suggest that really, at least from my perspective, I'm seeing some of the Jewish believers that have trusted Christ, but yet they're still hanging on to some of the dietary problem, things that they learned in the Old Testament, and they were very, very strict in that. And these Gentile believers, why, they don't heed to this at all. And so these weak ones were very judgmental over the strong ones. And then on the other hand, the strong ones, perhaps the Gentile believers that didn't have all this in their background, and why they accepted the gospel of Christ, and they accepted the liberty that they had as a result of the gospel of Christ, and why what they were doing is they were kind of looking down their noses at these other folk. And so there's a bit of a difficulty that's risen between them. And even though perhaps the issues at that point may not be the issues of today, but the principle is still there. So they thought, these weak ones, they thought, these boys, they don't really have a whole lot, because look what they're eating. I knew a sister one time who was determined, and she believed, that you never served the preachers anything but roast beef. You see? I daresn't tell her. In fact, I think I did. On one occasion, we had the late Doug Howard staying with us. This is many years ago. And Shirley, for some reason, was away that Saturday evening. I don't know if she was called in to work or what the case, but she wasn't there. So just me and Doug. So I had to cook some supper. And so I said to Doug, I said, what would you like? And he's just the two of us, he said, do you have any hot dogs? I said, sure. So that night I served the late, great Doug Howard burnt hot dogs. Of course, this particular sister would have been aghast at that. Roast beef was the only thing. Mind you, my burnt hot dogs and my roast beef are very similar. And you probably wouldn't tell them apart. But if she had that particular viewpoint, God bless her. I have no problem with that. The difficulty arises when that particular idea is sort of being forced on others. Now we have a difficulty. And now we have to be spiritual in our response to this problem. And how are we going to handle this problem? Well, can I suggest that in some cases of these difficulties, when one person perhaps has a particular viewpoint, and it's, well, that's their viewpoint, okay. But once they begin to promote and to push the viewpoint, then perhaps it'll be up to the responsible brethren to just sort of step in the picture and deal with it. You see, the assembly is not going to be held hostage to someone's viewpoint, whether that is roast beef over hot dogs. So this is the case in part on the weak side. They would have a particular idea, and they would really, really promote the idea. Now, as far as you and I are concerned, and Paul says in chapter 15, verse 1, and he links himself with the strong. He says, we then that are strong ought to bear the infirmities of the weak, and not to please ourselves. Now, as far as you and I are concerned, I dare say that each one of us this afternoon in the meeting would suggest that we're strong. But when I was going over these chapters and I began to look at it, I thought I was strong. But maybe there's some issues that I may be weak on. Weak perhaps not in knowing what I believe, but weak perhaps in the fact the way I deal with things and deal with others. I just assumed that I was strong. But maybe I have to reevaluate that. I'm going to give you another example. In today's society, in 2018, there's an awful lot of comments and suggestions and people speaking and people getting upset in relation to clothing. See? Mm-hmm. Yeah. In 2010, I took Shirley back home from the Atlantic Canada, and we went over to Newfoundland for a little visit. Now, there's a group of Christians over there that I was with when I was a teenager. And I knew them all since those teen years. And I was with them when Mr. Campbell and Mr. Goff and then Mr. Joyce came along and had meetings. I was there, and a large number got saved. And I was there the day that a large number, over 25, I believe, I'd have to ask my brother, Mr. Goff, but I said, at least 25 were baptized on one occasion. I was there 2 weeks later when four more got baptized once they saw the first baptism. I was there the very first Sunday morning that they broke bread. I was there when we built the hall. So I knew these folk. And I knew them all through the years. And I've been sort of indirectly in touch with these individuals. And so we're going to go back and pay them a visit. But I also knew that they had some ideas in relation to colored shirts that was very strong. And I could have gone in and said, no, fellows, this is silly. What are you talking about, colored shirts versus the white shirt? And I could have gone in and really promoted myself and been very, very aggressive in the thing and walked away disappointed. But I tell you what I did. One of the last things we did before we went east, I went and I bought some white shirts. Because I didn't want to offend them. I didn't want to upset things. There's one thing that has always been my goal in life. That whenever I meet Christians, regardless of where they hang their hat on a Sunday, regardless, and whether I meet them in relation to work, or perhaps on the BC ferry going back and forth, whenever I meet Christians, I try and leave them better off, to give them a little something that helped them along the way. And so when we went back there, one of the last things we did was, I went and I picked up a couple white shirts, so that I wouldn't offend them. Now this is where we can't be forcing the issue. One of the difficulties in a similar situation that I see even in recent months and last year or so is certain ideas that have come up. And the ideas, they're basically old ideas. I mean, I remember when I was, go back 40 years in my teen years, in my early 20s and so on, and there were certain ideas that were really, really being pushed among some of the younger brethren, and it came and went. And if I talk to some of the older ones, they go back into another previous generation, the same thing all over again, you know. And of course, in 2018, we seem to have the same situation. But what bothers me more than just the issue, what bothers me sometimes is the spirit behind the issue, where somebody is really aggressively trying to promote their own way. Now, if that's the case, how do you and I handle that? And how do we handle it so that we still maintain fellowship and we still maintain a friendship and a fellowship between them? Because these issues do come up and these issues do happen. And the older I get, it's no fun getting old, you know. You're getting closer to dying. That's profound. Anyway, but the more I discover these things, I say, now, wait a minute. There must be a way in which we can deal with this. There must be a way that we can solve the problem without causing a problem. Now, the weak in the one hand, and as we go down the chapter a little bit, I'm going to suggest that as I read this, that after we get into chapter 15, he stops referring about the weak and the strong, and he starts referring to the Jew and the Gentile. So what I'm thinking is the weak brother perhaps is the Jewish brother that has this background of all the things that he learnt as a child and upward in relation to dietary issues and what have you. Very, very critical, you know. He's judging. So what Paul does as he outlines in these three or four chapters, and it's difficult to, I'm tempted just to go down word by word, verse upon verse, but the difficulty is, I'm just here today, so we want to get a bit of an overview of the thing. So really what Paul does, now first of all, he reminds them, as we begin this section, the practical section. He says to them, to all, he says, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that ye present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. God does not ask us to do anything that is unreasonable. He does not ask the sisters to do things that are unreasonable. He doesn't ask the brethren to do things that are unreasonable. But what he wants us to do is that which is reasonable. And that is, of course, as he says here, that we present ourselves a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God. And underline that, holy and acceptable. Because that would indicate a little bit about my private life. Holy and acceptable unto God. And this is my reasonable service. And this is so he goes down. But as he begins to go down, and then a little bit later on in the chapter, he emphasizes a little bit that in the body there's many different members. For as we have many members in one body, and all members have not the same office, and so there's a variety. And we're thankful for that. Because if everybody was like me, it wouldn't be a very pretty picture. So we need that variety. And he's telling us that. He's saying that God has created a variety. Now, there's a variety of us. First of all, he wants us to present our bodies to God as a reasonable service. Not be conformed to the world around us, but to be transformed, he says in verse number 2. But be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Then he goes on to tell us that there's a variety. We're not all the same. But God, in his wonderful grace and mercy, has... As he is building this church, he is doing so with all sorts of people, all types of people. Why, there's those which are, have different cultures and different backgrounds and different ideas, and he's saving them by his grace. And so what is happening here? And all of a sudden you see, I come from the Maritimes. And down in the Maritimes, we did things right. Now I come out west. And what a predicament we're in. That's my background. And when I first came out here, that was my thinking. And then I was very fortunate to sit under a brother, Mr. Jim Hopwood, in Port Alberni, and he began to teach us things, and I thought to myself, well, I never heard that before. And all of a sudden we began to learn. And not only did we begin to learn really what the scriptures did teach us, but we began to learn a little bit the way we to react and act. And interact with other believers. And so this is what Paul, as he goes down. And then, of course, I read in chapter 12, he says, abhor that which is evil, cleave to that which is good, be kindly affectionate one to another with brotherly love. And so the whole concept of love comes into the picture. And we have the same concept in chapter number 13, where there he tells us that he that loveth another hath fulfilled the law. And loveth worketh no ill to his neighbor. Therefore love is the fulfilling of the law. In verses number 8 and again in verse number 10. And so now we begin to have a respect for each other. And we begin to have a love for each other. And we begin to want to help each other. Now in the process we're beginning to discover that sometimes we may not think alike. And we may not have quite the same idea. And the ideas are differing. And these ideas, of course, at times it may just be an idea, but sometimes it may get to a point that it's getting just a little bit too much. So what do we do? Do we cast the person aside? Do we throw them overboard? I think I mentioned already the fact when someone does have a particular idea, the assembly is not being held hostage. But what happens is the brethren go and they help. And they deal with. And they talk to. And they try to help the individual that may have this particular idea. And it may take a little bit of time. And it may take a little bit of patience. And it may take a little bit of stress. And it may take a lot of prayer. As we try to help each other. And that is the practical side of what he's getting at in these particular verses. So in chapter number 3 of, or 13 rather again, as he emphasizes the whole concept of love. Now in chapter 14, of course, he's telling us very plainly, there's those that are weak and those that are strong. And one is judging the other, and listen, we can't do that. God has not put into our hands the whole concept of judgment, but rather he says in chapter, verse number 10, for why dost thou judge thy brother? Or why dost thou set it not thy brother? For we shall all stand before the judgment seat of Christ. And so now this is the true judgment, and this is what he's bringing in this particular passage. The fact that the judge, we're going to stand before the judgment seat of Christ. Now why are we judging each other? See, these are the problems. And then, of course, he speaks in chapter 15, he talks to those that are strong. He says, we then that are strong ought, and I understand that word ought, it is a word of emphasis, you see. We ought to bear the infirmities of the weak and not to please ourselves. Sometimes when we think of this expression, not to please ourselves, we might even get this attitude, well, no, this is, I'm right, that's a bunch of nonsense, and we're going to move forward. We're going to please ourselves. And I've even heard some that would have this idea, and they want to, there's a barrier up, or there's a wall up, or there's a fence up, and they want to tear that fence down. I think of the words of the British philosopher, E.K. Chesterton. He said, before you tear down a fence, pause. And just remember why it was put there in the first place. Now that's good advice from a philosopher. Before you tear down the wall, think about it. And remember, why was it put there in the first place? So the strong perhaps would have the tendency to be a little bit more aggressive as they're moving farther along. But really, in a sense, Paul is saying here, now then, we that are strong, we have to bear the infirmities of the weak. So we have to try and help the weak. And so what you have here is not two different people going in different directions. But what we really have is two coming together, and one is trying to help the other. And again, patience, scripturally, spiritually, prayerfully. Not beat the person up. Not to get him in so that we can set him straight. But to deal with the person in a nice sort of way. And eventually, ultimately, prayerfully, we'll begin to see things happening. See, this is a real problem back then. This was a difficulty. And some of these difficulties, I believe, are even today. In fact, as Paul comes to the conclusion of chapter 15, and we read those four verses from verse 30 down to verse 33, and he says, I beseech you, brethren, for the Lord Jesus Christ's sake, and for the love of the Spirit, that ye strive together with me in your prayers to God for me. And he gives the reasons. Now, if we go back to the book of Acts, we'll see what really happened when Paul went down to Jerusalem. But the first thing is that I may be delivered from them that do not believe in Judea. He's very, very concerned. He knows their thought. He knows what they're going to do. He knows how they're going to react. Because once upon a time, he led them against the Christians. And he's going down because the saints in Macedonia and Achaia, they've got together a gift, you see. They put together a gift for the poor saints in Jerusalem that are having a difficult time. And they want to share what they have. And I would judge from 2 Corinthians that these believers themselves, they gave out of their own poverty to help. And so Paul has been given this gift, and he wants to go down. And the first thing, he's aware of the fact that once I go down, why the ungodly, the unsaved, if I'm back there again, there's going to be problems. So please, brethren, pray for me that this doesn't happen, and that we will be delivered from them. But then he says, that my service, which I have for Jerusalem, may be accepted of the saints. Now this, just stop a sec. These saints in Jerusalem were poor. They were having difficulties. What was the reason for that? I don't know. But you remember back early in the Acts why there's those that didn't have, and those that had, they sold what they had and they shared it together. But now some time has come and gone, and the saints in Jerusalem, whether they were not able to get proper jobs or whatever the case because of the faith in Christ, whatever the reason was, they were suffering. And what Paul is looking at is the fact that where I'm hoping, he says, that my service that I have for Jerusalem may be accepted of the saints. I'm hoping that those poor Jewish brethren that are suffering will actually accept this gift from the Gentile believers. Because the Gentile believers, you know, they may have some difficulty. They may say, well, you know, Paul, he's up there preaching to the Gentiles, and he's not preaching circumcision. He's not preaching some of these things that perhaps some of those Jewish brethren are hanging on to, you know. And so they might have had a problem with those Gentile believers. And Paul's praying, asking the saints of Rome to pray that what he is going to do, that he said, that I have for Jerusalem, may be accepted of the saints, that the saints in Jerusalem will accept this gift from Gentile believers. You see the problem that Paul is trying to overcome. And that is not just between the weak and the strong, but between the Jews and the Gentiles. And so that they might... In fact, I wonder that this problem that these Jewish brethren had, if God's not in the thing, God has brought them to this point because they need to learn a lesson. And if God hadn't brought them to the point, they may never have learned the lesson. And so they got to learn a lesson. And Paul's praying that they will. And that they will accept from these Gentile believers. And so that there'll be a warmth, there'll be a connection, and there'll be brotherly love being displayed and shown. And Paul knows what he's up against. So he's asked these folks over there in Rome, you folks pray for me. And don't just pray at supper time or whatever the case. He said, but strive together with me in your prayers to God. Strive together with me. Because this is so important. Now Paul wants to go to Rome. He's going to go up to Rome. He wants them to pray as well that I may come unto you with joy by the will of God. And God's will was that Paul was going to go to Rome. And the whole way was going to be paid by the Roman government. The chains part, well, that was extra. But Paul doesn't get up there just yet. He's got a white ways to go. Ultimately, of course, he wants to go to Spain. Now, whether he did or not, I have no idea. But he does get to Rome. But not quite the way he wanted to go to Rome. And what he wanted down there in Jerusalem was something that was going to take place that's going to strengthen the relationship between these various Christians that are obviously strained, and perhaps it's because of cultural background differences. But he wants to bring them together. And God has arranged it so that these individuals are in a position that maybe they're going to learn to accept. And you know, they tell me that sometimes it takes more grace to receive than to give. Sometimes it takes more grace to receive than to give. There's been times in our lives that we've been privileged to give. And there's been times in our lives where we've been humbled and had to receive. That goes against the old flesh, you know. That goes against the pride. But it's nice to be able to see what Paul's doing here with these particular believers as he's trying to bring them together. Now the weak, yes, we have the weak, we have the strong. But he says again back in chapter 15, he said, listen, even Christ pleased not himself. Peter tells us that he left us an example. So when we watch and look and read and study in relation to the life of Christ, and we see what he did he please himself? No. He always did that which was the Father's mind and will, of course. But we've watched him, and so often, if we were in that situation, we might have said something a little bit different. Or we might have acted in a little bit different. We might not have acted the way Christ acted. We might not have done what Christ did. And so therefore, when we think of the thing between what's happening here, and as Paul's going over, he said, listen, even Christ pleased not himself. And so we work with each other. We work each other to try to help each other. And if someone has a peculiar idea and something, now when I refer to these peculiar ideas and stuff, I want to be very adamant. I'm not talking here about doctrinal issues. For there's no give. Okay? Once we see what the scriptures teach, that's it. But so much in life, there's different ideas and different viewpoints and what have you. And different things. I mean, I remember I came back east one occasion, and there was an individual, and she said to me, Brother Carl Payne and I were there, and we had a week or so of ministry meetings, and it was good. And she said to me one day, and she brought up the issue that I mentioned earlier. And I thought, okay, what would be the mind of the brethren here? And she told me. And I said, well, let's just stick with that. There's no sense in causing a problem. No sense in causing a difficulty. But I said, I am curious. Why the necessity of white? Oh, she said, that speaks of purity. I said, okay. Now then, I'm confused. If that speaks of purity, why the black suit? Oh, I never thought of that. But I said, look, if this is what the brethren want, then just don't cause a problem. And so sometimes we may have some little idiosyncrasies in the way we do things or the way we say things or whatever the case. And this is where we have to sort of kind of learn. Because I've come in to discover that sometimes, you know, language changes. And certain times or certain words that perhaps we would use that are good words, spiritual words, and in today's society, that perhaps they're not being quite used so much. I got to grin and bear it. Yeah. You see, I'm perhaps weak in that. Because I have an idea. But I can't back it up. I just kind of keep quiet. But if you see someone that does have an idea, that's not perhaps what we would like. If that person is pushing it, you go to the brethren. But if the person is not pushing it, they just have this idea, and you know it's sensitive to them, then quietly you help them along the way. And you, as he says here, we bear the infirmities of the weak, and we don't please ourselves. This is a difficult one. For some of us, it's very difficult that we don't please ourselves. Why? Because Christ didn't please himself. That's what he says in verse 3. But as is written, the reproaches of them that reproach thee fell on me. Those that had a reproach towards God, why it fell on Christ. And if you speak for Christ, then you'll probably suffer reproach as well. But we don't force our own issues. Christ pleased not himself, neither do we. Again, if there's a difficulty, we go to the brethren and say, we have a problem. Can we solve it? If it's not a problem that is really dominant problem, then maybe through the process of time and help, scripturally, prayerfully, we can sit down with a person and we can help them along the way.